So, Wally, you've made it clear that you wouldn't depart in this situation, but primarily that's because of the issue of a single-engine aircraft at night rather than the night departure itself. But this is you as a many, many thousand-hour pilot with the instrument experience, even if you don't regularly fly IFR these days. Let's suppose you're out on the ramp with this VFR-only pilot. He's definitely going. You can't convince him to come over to Giovanni's with you. So you're going to put your hand on his shoulder and say, all right, when you're at the end of the runway ready to go, these are the things you need to think about. What are you going to say to this pilot knowing they are going to depart into the night?
Well, I guess the first thing I'd want to ask him is, since he won't select choice number 5, which of the 4 choices has he selected and how does he intend to execute them? And then I think the great hazard here is that first black hole right after takeoff. And I would just try to remind him that he's very likely going to lose outside VFR references, and he needs to rely on the instruments. And the danger is letting that nose drop. And that happens so often during that acceleration phase right after takeoff. And letting that nose drop could be disastrous there. So he needs to keep his eye on the pitch. He needs to make a no more than a 15-degree bank turn out toward Lakeport so that he can get some references there. And then hopefully he can see some lights and climb out straight ahead in that direction for a while. And I cross my fingers for him.
Dave.
You know, I disagree with Wally at my peril. I know, but it's like I'm taking off runway 28. I'm making a slight right turn to Lakeport, and I'm going to just climb over the lake or over the runway and climb up to 5,500 feet, head east and go.
So you're not concerned at all that the IFR departure from runway 28 is not authorized. You're going to pretend you don't even have that information. It looked good. You're going.
It's like it's calm winds. It's 12,000 foot ceiling. It's better than 10 miles visibility. This is a perfect night to fly VFR. And it's like the worst mistake this pilot seems to be making is he's got his head full of this IFR stuff. And he's making this decision way more complicated than it needs to be. And he's making this procedure way more complicated than it needs to be. It's a 3,600 foot runway. Takeoff runway 28. If you're concerned about the terrain beyond the end of the runway, you'll be 500 AGL or more by the time you get to the departure end of the runway. If it was a truly black hole when you turn right toward the lake and all the lights of civilization went away, and there was a real significant chance of loss of spatial orientation. Yeah, that would certainly enter into the thinking, but it's like there's a road right there. There's the town of Lakeport is right up ahead. I got to think that that's going to be pretty well lighted and provide some decent orientation. So it's like it does not seem like a death-defying maneuver to me to just take off into the wind, climb over the lake or the runway or the town of Lakeport, get to beyond the minimum safe altitudes and head east to home.
So, Kevin, what would you say, both for yourself and to this young pilot?
Kind of like what Dave was just saying, I probably would do the same thing myself as I would recommend the VFR pilot. The reason I'm saying this is this pilot, presumably at this point, has the skill set to keep the greasy side down in night VFR weather. The setup says that he's night current and night proficient, and that he's got some instrument training. So that tells me that flying VFR at night is a skill that this pilot should have well in hand. So for me, I'm going to depart 28 because the wind favors it slightly. It's going to help your climb gradient just a little bit. On the climb out, right traffic for runway 28 puts you on the north side of the airport towards the lake. And I'm doing that visual climb over the airport, but it doesn't have to be anything special. A visual climb over the airport could just be flying a traffic pattern, which is how I think it would be best executed in this case. So if you depart runway 28 and you fly right traffic just the way you're supposed to and climb up until you're over the 4,000 and change number that you want to be before you turn on course, there's that hill east of the airport that goes up to 4,300. So ideally, I'd want to be above that before departing the pattern area, because you won't necessarily be able to see that and discern it from the much lower area that's the lake that's north of it.
All right. So you also would forget about the IFR procedures, forget about the hill on that end of the runway that made that IFR departure forbidden, going to make a VFR departure 2.8 into the light, into the wind slightly, and just make sure you don't hit the mountain that you passed coming in. So life is good there.
Exactly. And just flying a normal right traffic pattern off a runway 2.8 should do that nicely for you. And I think that flying a night VFR traffic pattern should be something that this pilot should be able to very easily do.
All right. Well, Katrina, what would you say, both for yourself and to this pilot?
My personal opinion is option one. I agree that this pilot is set up to be pretty night current, and I don't think there's any reason that option one should be impossible here. I do agree with Dave that I think this person is way up in their head in terms of what the right procedures are. My way of responding to those procedures is to still use runway 10 and then proceed to Lakeport. You have some references there. Obviously, you understand at this point that night, I mean, I would think with this level of night experience that you should know that the black hole effect exists, especially if you're flying already in mountainous terrain. This should be an experience this pilot's already had. And so I think that option one should be quite possible for this pilot.
I'm going to come to Wally after just hearing what Dean says.
Well, for me personally, I would say that the vast majority of my flying time has been VFR flight in the daytime. And so just reading through this and thinking about the pilot with 300 hours and adding in my own personal experiences, it does give me some significant concern, because with 300 hours, I think back to how when I got out of aviation school, I had, I think, 300 and some hours. And looking back, I realized that I was pretty green in a lot of ways. And so it does give me enough concern to say that I would recommend that he stay overnight, and that's what I would choose to do as well. But another thing that I would be doing at this point after thinking through this whole scenario is that I would be backing up and wanting to learn a lesson, or maybe multiple lessons, that I can take into the future from this whole thing. And so I would be looking back and sort of kind of kicking myself for allowing myself to allow the fish storyteller to continue on to the point where I can't depart still in the daytime. So I'm backing up and I'm saying, okay, what do I need to learn from this so that in the future I can stop the fish stories early enough to go ahead and make a departure while I still have some sunlight left? And that to me would be a valuable lesson to take out of this.
Wally.
Certainly this departure would be no challenge for Dave or Kevin or Katrina. They're experienced. They have IFR experience. They have lots of nighttime. I think this departure for our scenario pilot is a totally different departure than he's probably ever seen before. Remember, he's based out there in Sacramento. I'm guessing a good part of his nighttime is in that flat Sacramento Valley with a lot of lights around. And this very well could be the first time he's experienced that black hole phenomena. And he simply doesn't have a lot of room to wander around. He's got to execute this departure very nicely. And true, it can be done. I don't disagree with that. It's just pretty risky for this guy, I think.
Paul?
Yeah, I think Dean really put his thumb on it here. I think in ADM, aeronautical decision making, we overcomplicate these considerations too much. And in this circumstance, he's got all these options. He doesn't really have the experience or the understanding to necessarily execute them. I don't think the risk is that high on the black hole aspect of it. I don't like the terrain that much en route in a single engine, but the larger overview here is that, and I learned a new term when I was covering the Kobe Bryant hearing, is planned continuation bias. And all that means is get-home-itis. And that very phenomenon causes a lot of accidents, including the Kobe Bryant accident, because people assume that, hey, I was planning to do this, I'm going to do it, and therefore I'm going to diminish all of these risks. But I would make the point, as Dean alluded to, is that the real consideration is back when he's hearing the fish stories. Okay, so this is dragging on. At that point, I think the wise thing to do is to understand that I don't have to go tonight. I think I'm going to stay here tonight, going to relax, go to the bar, have a few beers, and then I can listen to the fish stories. And in doing that, he's inoculated himself to a degree against planned continuation bias. He's shown that he can cancel and it ain't no big deal. And if more people did that, I think a lot more people would be alive. My personal story on this is when I lived in Connecticut, I was flying charters out to the Cape and Islands. Flew six of them in one day to Nantucket, minimums all day, very tired. Dropped the last people off and called the charter off. And they said, well, you can come back or you can stay there tonight. And I said, you know what? I think I'll stay here tonight, even though it is Nantucket in July and a room costs $300. And I did. And that taught me the lesson that, you know, that's the right thing to do. Because in the morning when I departed, I was much fresher and much better for it. So it's the same circumstance in this. Kick back, relax. This stuff is supposed to be fun.
You know, one of the things that I find interesting here is where people see the risk. Wally mentioned that he wasn't too concerned about the night departure per se, that it's not terribly risky, but he doesn't fly single engine at night at all, but would fly it in a twin. Paul, not too concerned about the black hole effect for an experienced pilot or someone who can handle it, as well as maybe Kevin and Dave. But Paul saying, you know, it's the terrain going back, more like Wally, like, I'm not so happy about that in a single engine airplane. So I'm curious, we've been talking about this in terms of risk, and we've been focusing on the time of the pilot, and yet there are a lot of very high time pilots that have flown right into terrain in sophisticated airplanes, even with terrain warning equipment. So what do people say to that, Kevin?
Yeah, I do think that is worth addressing. We don't know, unless I missed it, what level of experience this pilot has flying over mountainous terrain at night. And I do think that was a really good point that's brought up earlier of the difficulty and risk with that, with a lack of visual reference to the ground where you have terrain that you can't see. That's a whole different thing when compared to flying over an area that's relatively flat and well lit. And I would say that if this pilot doesn't have experience having done that, then staying on the ground, I might be willing to accept that as a better choice, given that scenario.
There's definitely a component of, you know, potential complacency, you know, when you're flying at night and you can't see the thing you should be concerned about, such as that mountain, Kevin, that on downwind for 2-8, like you're heading right towards it, potentially. It's directly on your route home. It makes me think of, Sky Harbor several years ago. I think it was a turbo commander or a twin commander, and they just took off and flew right into a mountain. Again, with TAWS on board, experienced pilots, but not thinking about necessarily what's out there. I think they were also trying to duck around airspace, so they were a little distracted. This pilot is the potential for being distracted. And, you know, what you don't know about absolutely can hurt you here. So, Wally.
I might be a little touchy about the black hole, but I had a very scary black hole experience many years ago doing airline training at an airport west of Miami called TNT. In those days, we called it Test and Transition. It has a different name now. We were doing touch and goes out there, and shortly after takeoff, the pilot that I was flying with got distracted with some switches on the overhead panel. As the instructor, I allowed myself to get distracted watching him be distracted. And I looked up, and we were in a 60-degree bank. The nose was dropping, and we were 700-800 feet above the ground at that time. So we were very few seconds from putting that airplane in the swamp. And it came on me so fast and such a surprise. I was disappointed in myself, but it only took a few seconds distraction, and it was a serious situation.
Katrina.
One thing that I wanted to bring up is we haven't really discussed the passenger, and Wally, you had mentioned having the terrain information on the iPad in the lap as being an issue. And I would agree with that. I don't think we should be looking back and forth. But I think there is a way to utilize this passenger, even if they have no pilot experience, to essentially have the iPad in a location where we could use that terrain information. It's a little bit closer to the instruments if they're able to make that useful. just as a, because I certainly agree that especially if I kind of assumed a level of comfort with terrain, but if that's not in fact the case with this pilot, then we would certainly need to get some help here. And why can't we use this passenger as assistance in this departure?
Kevin?
I personally don't like the idea of using the passenger that way, but only because presumably this pilot hasn't done that before. I love the idea of using a passenger as a resource in the cockpit that way if you can, but to use a passenger that way when it really counts is, I think, potentially a recipe for disaster.
Oh, I was just going to say, I completely agree with Katrina. The passengers there, they can be a great resource. In this situation, it sounds like mostly the resource is they're an iPad holder, but it's like that can be helpful in itself. You know, we're talking about these obstacles and these mountains and the risky stuff, terrain. We've got such great tools to address those. Mostly before you even depart the airport, you'll have a plan for how you're going to do it. And if the plan goes as planned and you can spiral up and you can climb to 5,500, suddenly that terrain is no longer an issue. You know, you're way above any minimum safe altitudes in that sector. And it's just the climb. The black hole is real, but this pilot has had, you know, is well into their instrument training. And it's like, it just seems like this is the way to gain experience. You got a beautiful night for flying, use it.
I do like that, Dave. I do like the idea that this is like an opportunity for this pilot to gain experience. Now, we might disagree on what that experience should be, but nonetheless, the pilot has found themselves in a situation that they didn't plan for. And being able to use that situation to their advantage makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I like the idea of using this as an experience builder, but I would like it a lot more if perhaps he had his instrument flight instructor with him, and just because of the situation out here on this particular night. And then I just wanted to also say, I find it really interesting that this is a challenging scenario. We have a lot of different opinions here, and we have not even brought in another factor that could well be the case in stories like this, and that is we haven't really talked about maybe he had a reason to get home, like there's something he needs to be home for that's going to happen tomorrow morning that he won't be able to do because he's not going home tonight. And that would even complicate it even further. So it's just a really interesting all-around situation. One thing that I thought of as we're talking this out is that I think a lot of times we talk about these instrument situations, these optical illusions, and these things that can happen, but many times we've not actually experienced them. And so if one of those happens, we're going to be really surprised in the moment. And so for me personally, I just have to come back and say, I don't think it's worth the risk.
Paul?
Yeah, when Katrina brought up the passengers, I thought you were going to go with an assumption of risk for the passenger. And in that case, you are doing this. So if you argue that, hey, this is a great learning experience, it's also one with risk. It's not a huge risk, but it's a significant risk for a pilot who doesn't have that much experience. So I definitely make different judgments in behalf of a passenger than I do on my own. So to me, that's a circumstance, that's a factor in this circumstance. As is in general aviation, if there's any place you absolutely have to be, you shouldn't be in a general aviation airplane. You should always be ready and willing to say, hey, I can't make this flight. Nothing justifies excess risk just to get somewhere in a general aviation airplane. Nothing at all. Very few life and death situations. And I think we have to continually remind people of this. And then again, it's that term, plan continuation bias, that people use these airplanes and they stress the envelope beyond reasonable limits.
You know, I want to bring this back to where Wally kind of started the whole discussion about personal minimums, that you can look at personal minimums two ways. You can look at it as like a box that restrains you, or you can look at it as an opportunity for an experience and new information. So this pilot has reached a point where, okay, they made a mistake, which was they didn't cut off the fish story so that they could get back to the plane in the daylight. And now the question is, how are they going to handle that? What's the risk benefit of that going to be? And while I don't disagree that a departure could be safely made at night, I think people have made a good point. There are a lot of ways to do that. And for some people, that might be the right decision. I still think there's a great nugget in Wally's point that if your personal minimum says, hey, I'm not going to learn on the fly something like this. I'm going to only do it if I had a chance to practice. And I just learned I need to practice this kind of black hole takeoff situation. Therefore, I can't depart. Therefore, I get to go have a nice dinner and I get to have a beautiful flight back the next day without the stress, without the risk I'm not willing to take, and with a mission for what my next flying lesson is going to be.